Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he wants to talk with Governor Walker about the veto promises he made to the Republican senators who were originally withholding their support from the state budget last Friday. And he wants to also talk to the governor about his priorities in the $76 billion two-year state spending plan. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We will talk with Speaker Voss in the first half of this hour, and we will welcome your questions and views on the budget and on the Foxconn deal, which Governor Walker signed yesterday. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And in the second half of this hour, we will get another perspective on Foxconn and the state budget. Peter Barca, who is the Assembly Minority Leader for the rest of this month, will join us in our second half. Let me welcome Robin Voss, a Republican state senator from Burlington and the Assembly Speaker. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks a lot for being with us, and thanks for giving me something to work with here. I see on wispolitics.com that you want to speak with Governor Walker before he signs the budget. What do you want to talk to him about?
Well, I actually had a good conversation with Governor Walker yesterday.
Okay.
So my job as the Assembly Speaker is to make sure that the interests of the members of the Assembly are represented. You know, we have a process that's worked in Wisconsin for literally over 50 years, where the Assembly and Senate each work through the Joint Committee on Finance. You get some things you want. You get other things that you don't get the chance to get across the finish line, but you can always come back and introduce a bill and convince your colleagues. For whatever reason, these renegade senators at the end of the process decided that they were going to hijack what we normally do, and instead of negotiating where they convince their colleagues and work within the process, they kind of decided they were going to, you know, kind of give a ransom list to Governor Walker. So, you know, they have every right to do that. You know, I can't complain necessarily about their actions, only about the process that I think they hijacked. But that's why I wanted to make sure that things that were promised to them at the very end didn't hurt the interests of the members that I represent in the state assembly who kind of went along with the traditional process. And that's why I wanted to take the time to have a conversation with Governor Walker. I'll be in Madison on Wednesday. I assume that I'll sign the budget. That's my part in the process. So I can move to Governor Walker by the end of the week. So, you know, I think that there's a problem with how those individual senators went about the process when they couldn't convince people inside their own Assembly Republican caucus to go with their positions. They kind of decided to hijack it, but, you know, that's past history.
Yeah, so this Swiss politics piece suggested that it was possible this might delay the signing by Governor Walker of the budget, since you are supposed to sign it, too. You don't see it delaying the budget from being signed by Friday, which would be the first day of fall?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, the process actually is once a bill passes the legislature, 4 weeks from that point, it automatically goes to the governor. That's the way we always operate. If for some reason the governor wants to sign it early, he can request that we send it to him early. It's not required. There's no constitutional requirement. There's no delay. It's just allowing it to get done earlier than it normally would. So, you know, certainly I want to make sure that we have the budget done as quickly as possible, but I'm not going to do it in a way that threatens what my members need for their own districts. And I think in the end, it'll all work itself out.
Yeah. So did you think that what Governor Walker promised those holdout senators is going to somehow conflict with the best interests of the rest of the state?
There are some things in there that I wish he had not made the promises on. We had a good conversation about many of them yesterday. And I think the problem is, as an example on school choice, the Assembly Republican position was to expand school choice eligibility to up to 300%. Many members of the state Senate didn't want to go along with that. They wanted to have a lower number. We compromised, which is kind of the art of politics, and we ended up at a lower number, but we got something across the finish line. Well, one of their list of demands was to go to the Assembly Republican position. Well, you need to convince your colleagues that that's what's required to get your vote, not wait until the end and hold people hostage for a position that, frankly, the Assembly held the entire time and your own colleagues inside your own caucus disagreed with. I think what the problem is these guys are very unpersuasive. They don't actually have the ability to convince the other people inside their team of why they believe in something. So instead, they focused on holding Governor Walker hostage. And ultimately, you know, while I don't like the fact that it happened like it did, and I think it's really bad going forward, I certainly understand he wanted to get the budget done, and that's the only way he could do it.
Yeah. Well, we did speak with the Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel during our state capitol report yesterday. I don't think he thought he was holding the budget hostage. He thought that it's... Yeah, perfectly normal for the Senate when it takes up the budget to possibly make some changes to it. And he thought, that you were putting an artificial deadline by saying we're not coming back to take up your changes.
Well, that's a prime example of somebody who's new to the Senate and hasn't actually been involved in the finance process before, because we negotiate literally from January on almost every item in the budget. Sometimes the Senate position wins, sometimes the Assembly position wins, sometimes the governor position wins, but that's the art of how we make all this stuff work, right? It's compromise. I think Senator Strobel and some of those other folks don't understand what compromise really is, and that's why at the end they kind of said my way or the highway, and unfortunately in that circumstance they got what they wanted in a few very minor things. It's not, you know, when I look at this budget, Joy, there is so much to be proud of. I don't want to let these three renegade senators hijack the process to think that somehow they got things that, you know, were going to make a huge difference to anybody. Let's look at where the budget really is. Over $600 million in increased funding for our public schools, an expansion of school choice, $500 million less in spending than the budget Governor Walker proposed, and still funding our priorities and health care for the poor, schools for every single child in the state, you know, continuing the tuition freeze. There's so much to be proud of. That's what I really want to focus on, not these guys who hijacked the process that 99% of your people who are listening right now, frankly, don't care about.
We are talking with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, and you can too. We are talking now about the state budget, which Governor Walker wants to sign before fall begins, which is Friday. And we wonder if you have some questions about it, thoughts about it, reactions to this issue that came up at the very end, where four Republican state senators wanted some changes to the state budget and got some assurances from Governor Walker that he would perform some vetoes that would give them some of what they wanted. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you think this is a good budget for the state of Wisconsin? So, Speaker Voss, though, clarify for me, in your conversation with Governor Walker, did he say that he was going to give those GOP senators the changes they wanted via veto or not?
No, I think he made a commitment, and like I say, I don't agree with it. I wish we could have been more involved in the process instead of only having those three renegade senators. Really, Senator Craig wasn't involved in this, but those three renegade senators kind of dictating the end. But luckily, these guys, as they look at it, they weren't able to add anything to the budget that was positive. They weren't able to say, geez, let's change how many children are part of school choice, or they weren't able to actually try to lower taxes or anything like that. All they really did was were able to stop some of the reforms that Republicans compromised by putting in the budget. So I guess that's what they get.
Yeah. And just one of the, I know that Senator Strobel, one of his priorities is this, the elimination of the statewide prevailing wage. And he wanted that to be done immediately and not delayed until like next September. And he got the assurance that it would be the prevailing wage for statewide projects would be delayed or would be eliminated immediately. Do you have any problem with that?
No, not at all. And this is one of the ironic things that we offered that as one of the potential amendments that we would look to put in the assembly. And it came back to us that they said that wasn't enough. So I think the problem is these guys are just bad at negotiating, Joy. They don't know that sometimes you've got to take a win in order to move the process down the field and then come back and fight another day. I think they're, it's just part of the process that hopefully they'll learn that holding somebody else hostage might make you feel good for the moment, but it doesn't actually accomplish a whole lot.
Yeah. Did you, were you able to discuss your priorities with Governor Walker and, I guess, get assurances that he would or would not veto anything else?
Yeah, I mean, we had a very good discussion. Look, I have considered myself one of Governor Walker's key allies, and I think he would say the same thing. You know, in 2006, when he ran for governor the first time, I was one of only a few legislators to endorse him. So he and I have a good, strong relationship. I think he does a really good job. So all I wanted to do was to make sure that an awful lot of the priorities that Assembly Republicans had in the budget that we passed were in the budget. And I think at the end of the day, the vast majority, if not almost all, of our priorities are going to be in there. So we chose to take a more positive tone. I didn't say I'm going to hold out and not do something, like not vote for the budget if you don't do exactly what I wanted, like these other guys did. So it was more a conversation of two friends, which we do quite often.
Steve from Mount Horeb wants to know why the budget doesn't increase the gas tax. We only have 30 seconds before a news break. Why doesn't the budget increase the gas tax?
Well, I have to admit, that's one of the things that I am most frustrated with, is we did not come up with a long-term sustainable funding source for transportation. The good news is, while we weren't able to fix the problem, we stopped it from getting worse. We dramatically lowered the level of bonding. We have a small fee to pay for the bonding, or at least a significant chunk of the new borrowing on our credit card that we actually did this time. So yes, he's right. We did not get that across the finish line, but not for lack of trying in the Assembly.
Let me jump in because we have news next, and we'll pick up after news. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are happy to have with us Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. He's talking with us about the newly passed state budget and the newly signed Foxconn deal. We're welcoming your questions and reactions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. In less than 10 minutes, we'll be talking with Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca. And we'll talk with him about similar issues. So, Speaker Voss, let's wrap up on the budget. When it comes down to it, you think this is a good budget for the state of Wisconsin or not? Are you too disappointed over that transportation budget?
No, I mean, it's 90% good. I mean, we did a great job, I think, in focusing on our key priorities, which are education, the UW system, tax relief. We've actually eliminated the state portion of the local property tax. We were able to make some significant changes in how we deal with our welfare benefits to incentivize people to work. More money goes into job training. I mean, so many positive things that, yes, I am disappointed that we did not find a solution to transportation. But as I said, I guess I take solace in the fact that we, for the first time, are actually not making it worse, which usually I think you could say is the first step to a solution. So, yeah, it didn't happen as quickly as I would have preferred. But at the end of the day, we're in a much better place with this budget passing than we would have been had we stood still.
Yeah, Vicki in Madison has a question. Hello, Vicki.
Hi. I just think it's rather disingenuous for Representative, Voss to claim that he's so proud of giving the school district $800 million and how they're helping the university, when in past budgets, they've cut public school funding by over $800 million. Cut the university's budget by, millions.
So are we just giving the university and public schools the money that was cut previously, Speaker Voss?
Well, no, that's not accurate. Actually, even before this budget passes, more money was going to schools. And this one, I think at the end of the day, before this budget even passes, there's $1 billion of additional money that's in local schools. So, yes, look, Democrats left us a huge mess at the end of the recession. Remember, they used one-time federal money to fill in holes inside the budget. And then when we took over, we literally got a $3 billion deficit. We got ourselves out of that. We now have record low unemployment. We have jobs flocking to our state. And we're able to reinvest in the school and the university system and all the things that make Wisconsin where it is. So, it's easy to look back and say, geez, we should have done something different. But obviously today, the successes really point to the fact that we made good decisions and we're able to keep making those with the dollars that come in to focus on tax relief and investing in our priorities.
Well, let's, because we have limited time now, talk about Foxconn. Governor Walker signed the Foxconn incentives bill yesterday at Gateway Technical College in Racine County. The state puts up $3 billion in exchange for Foxconn's investment of $10 billion in the facility and the creation of up to 13,000 jobs. So pretty confident that Foxconn will hold up its end of the bargain?
Well, the nice thing about the way we've structured the deal is if they don't hold up their end of the bargain, they don't get a penny from the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. It's really focused on two areas. Number one, on the construction side, they are anticipating building a facility that is over $7 billion of investment. In return for that, they get about $1.5 billion of help with doing that project. Obviously, they also get some help from the locals, where they're going to have a tax incremental financing district to help pay for the roads and the land and the infrastructure. On the other half of the equation, the other $1.35 billion is focused on the number of jobs that they create. So until somebody cashes a paycheck working at Foxconn, they don't get a nickel from the taxpayer. So that's how we do it for most other businesses in the state. It's just that this one is so much larger because of all the jobs they're bringing to one facility that it seems like it's obviously a huge amount of money. But I think that the investment is going to be worth it. I think that we've already seen other businesses look to come to the same region. We know that this investment is the largest foreign investment in our state's history and one of the largest in the history of our country. Why in the world do we let that pass us by at a time when we know the wages are going to be $15 an hour plus average of $54,000 of benefits? I would think this is even something that Bernie Sanders could support. And it's so difficult for me to understand why Democrats, suffering from what I call Walker derangement syndrome, oppose this bill. I mean, if this was proposed by a Democrat, they would be all over it. Good-paying jobs, family-supporting jobs, making an investment here in the state, all protecting the taxpayers. But because they hate Governor Walker so much, which I don't understand, they oppose the bill, except for good people like Peter Barkin, Corey Mason, and Todd Onstad, who stood up for their area and said, this is what we need to have happen because jobs are what we're all about.
We'll be talking with outgoing Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barka in the next few minutes. But before we get to that, Governor Walker's decision to sign the bill in Sturtevant raised some speculation that Racine County is the most likely site for the plant. A specific location has not been announced. How close is that decision to being made?
I think it's relatively close. I think it'll be in the next 1 or 2 weeks. But don't forget, Joy, Kenosha took itself out of the running. They sent a letter saying they did not want to any longer be considered. And considering there were only two sites, I think that most people are deducing it's probably going to be in Racine County, which, of course, is my area. So I am ecstatic that we're going to bring all those jobs to southeastern Wisconsin. So I think that the announcement will be relatively soon. They wanted to make sure the bill passed and that we were able to get a local agreement signed. Actually, each community, Kenosha and Racine, put forward their last best offer to the company before Labor Day. So I think they've been evaluating those, trying to figure out how it works for everyone. And then we'll get that announcement so shovels can go in the ground and people can start to work.
We, as I mentioned, will be talking to Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barka in our next half hour. He, like you, voted for the Foxconn package, and that did upset several members of his caucus. After a closed-door meeting with divided Democrats, he announced he would resign, step down from his leadership post at the end of the month. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I want to say, first of all, I have worked with many Democrats since I've first been elected, and Peter Barka is one of the most honorable men that I know. He and I probably disagree on 95% of the contentious topics, but he's always done it in a way that he's respectful. He tries to find that consensus, and I think Assembly Democrats will never know all of the victories that he got by working behind the scenes to stand up for what his caucus believes in. And I think it's a prime example where, unfortunately, legislative Democrats are going further and further to the left as Wisconsin continues to be a center-right state. And I think that's why they've had such electoral failures, because this is a prime example where somebody stood up for their district, voted for something that they thought was right. And if you don't stand with the liberal orthodoxy, they throw you out the door. I guess as a Republican, you know, I kind of enjoy the fact that they're in internal chaos. But as a citizen of the state, I don't want good people who stand up for what they believe in shown the door simply because they disagree.
State Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh is the front runner to take over for Barka as Assembly Minority Leader. He's also the only one who has reportedly shown interest in the job. How do you see yourself working with Representative Hintz, assuming it's him?
Yeah, I mean, I'll work with whoever the Democrats pick. You know, my job as Assembly Speaker is to work with everybody, try to find consensus, make the institution run as smoothly as I am able. Like I say, I had a great relationship with Peter, even though we disagreed on an awful lot of the policies. He's a good, honorable person, and I look forward to learning more about Gordon and his leadership style, and hopefully he follows in the way that Peter Barca conducted himself, and we'll have a good relationship.
All right. Now, last question. Now that your work with Foxconn and the budget are pretty much taken care of, what's the next order of business?
We will come back sometime in October. We really begin the heavy committee process where there's a ton of bills that, you know, kind of get pushed to the side as we finalize the negotiations on the budget. There's an awful lot of things that we'd like to focus on with regulatory reform. We'd love to have a discussion about comprehensive tax reform. I have asked Joel Kitchens, and he has confirmed it with Senator Luther Olson, to have a big, bold discussion on how we go forward with school funding to make sure that as times are changing, our formula keeps up with those. So there's a lot of big issues that are out there, and I am excited as Wisconsin continues to solve the big problems and lead the way for the country.
Well, Speaker Voss, I want to thank you very much for joining us and for joining us throughout the years. This is my last time interviewing you as I'm retiring at the end of the month, and I wanted to say congratulations to you in advance of your nuptials. I know that you are marrying one of our regular Week in Review guests, former State Representative Michelle Litchens, and I wish you both well.
And Joy, I feel the same way. I appreciate the fact that you have been my clock radio for almost a decade, and I have listened to your show. You've always done it with class. You've always been fair, and I'm certainly going to miss the job that you do, but I certainly wish you and your family well on your retirement. It's well-deserved.
Thank you so much. You're very kind. Robin Voss, a Republican state representative from Burlington and the Assembly Speaker. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We now will welcome in another perspective to talk about the state budget, the Foxconn deal, and his own decision to step down as Assembly Minority Leader. Peter Barca is a Democratic state representative from Kenosha and the outgoing Assembly Minority Leader. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Great to be back in your show. And let me start by congratulating you on your retirement and thanking you for, you know, your many years of service and just your professionalism, your insights, the way you kept your listeners informed about all of the issues that we're facing our state and country and many important local communities. So thank you so much.
You, thank you.
Certainly did a tremendous job and a retirement well deserved.
Thank you so much. And I know I do want to thank you too for coming on and talking with our listeners on a regular basis. And now you have about 2 weeks left as Assembly Minority Leader. It's a position you've held since 2011. You told the Kenosha News that you're very pleased with your decision to step down. Why are you pleased about it?
Well, I represent the Racine Kenosha area, and our area is facing a lot of upcoming challenges that are going to demand a lot of attention. Everything from, unfortunately, negative things like the attempt to resegregate schools in Racine, which we're hoping to try to ward off, to things like Foxconn that are going to require a lot of employment training issues and to try and take advantage of the jobs that will, in fact, come through the Kenosha Racine area. But there are many other issues. We have some huge transportation needs. We have many other challenges with incorporations and founder changes that I plan to play a big role in. And you know, being the leader is a daunting challenge. I probably cut my workload in half, frankly. And I've been very proud and pleased to lead our caucus over the course of the last 7 years and through some very tumultuous times and through some very difficult times, but also through some successes by being to ward off changes to our state retirement system, curbing the effort to try to limit people's rights to open records, and many other items in between. So it's been a fascinating period. Challenging period, and now it's time. We've got a lot of talented people in our caucus that I'm hoping will step up and, help to provide some good leadership going forward.
After the budget vote last week, Speaker Voss called you someone who has worked to make this institution better. Had a lot of kind words for you just you know, 3 minutes ago, too. Republican Senator Van Wongard, whose district encompasses yours, called you a friend and a rare breed in Madison, and that you can disagree without being disagreeable. He also said that it was unfortunate but predictable that Assembly Democrats are seeking a new leader because you voted for the Foxconn bill. Do you feel betrayed at all by your Democratic colleagues for essentially pushing you out over that?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm thankful for the kind remarks by the Speaker on the floor and previously, and Senator Van Wongard and I enjoy a very positive, constructive relationship, as I do with many people, with so many people across the spectrum, from Congressman Obey, who I serve with in the U.S. Congress, to many former colleagues. Have, you know, posted on my website, sent me private emails and messages and texts. I've been very hurt by those remarks. And you know, after Act 10, things were so acrimonious that, you know, it just seemed to me that we were in a place that was not a constructive one, certainly not reflective of Wisconsin. So I was pleased that Speaker Lost was a willing partner, and we decided that we would try to bring back Wisconsin, at least the Wisconsin approach, to try to work together with comedy and with dignity and try and set a new pace. So even though we disagree vigorously, and I hope to talk about the budget today too, because I think that reflects the fact that we're not following values in certain regard. But overall, it was an important period. I tried to lend my best effort to bringing back dignity to this body. And in terms of your last question, though, about Foxconn, you know, obviously, you know, this has been a very contentious issue. You know, I've been very outspoken about amendments that Democrats tried. I don't think we needed to provide exclusions for the environment. The company, I'm not sure, even asked for that because they said they would follow all the environmental regulations. I think it could have been a better deal overall by making it a 15-year deal. But at the end of the day, you know, all politics is local. And in my local community, the support could not be stronger. Virtually every village president, town board member, town chairman, the mayors, county executives in the region were all strongly in support, as were people. As I walk the community and go to various events, people are extremely thankful that I did stand up for our community. And I hope it works out for the state as a whole. Obviously, for it to work well for the state, things have to really play out very well. But for it to work for the county Racine area, you know, it's almost as if you can't lose because there'll be, you know, millions of dollars brought here for training and roads and things of that sort. So I've given the analogy to work for the state, we have to draw a straight or a flush. But to work for our local community, we only need a 7 high. So, that's, you know, the way it broke. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is the communities I grew up in, the places I'll retire, and I'm responsive to those people in the Kenosha Racine area that elected me and that I feel like kinship and closeness with, and I want to look out for their interests.
Yeah, the Foxconn bill passed the Assembly by a vote of 64 to 31. Only four Democrats voted for it. You, Corey Mason, Todd Onstad, and Jason Fields. Did you feel you had any responsibility as minority leader to side with your party, who's nearly 90% of its members oppose the deal? And I'm sorry, we just have a minute before a news break.
Well, you know, it's interesting because many of my party, including myself, rightfully decry the Republicans of Washington putting their country before their party. And in this case, I would never put my party before my home community. Obviously, people in my area strongly want this development, and at the end of the day, that's people that elect. So, as much as you know, I care deeply about my party, I believe in my party. At the end of the day, I think you know, you ought to represent people that are sensitive.
We will continue talking with Peter Barca, Democratic State Representative from Kenosha, the outgoing Assembly Minority Leader. We'll talk more about who might replace him as minority leader after we come back from news. And we'll talk a little bit more about Foxconn. And we will also get Peter Barca's view on the state budget, which Governor Walker hopes to sign this week. And we welcome your questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with State Representative Peter Barka. He is a Democratic state representative who represents Kenosha and the Racine areas. He is the outgoing Assembly Minority Leader. And if you would like to talk with him, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We should be clear, Representative Barka, that you are not giving up your seat in the state assembly, just the title of minority leader. Representative Gordon Hintz.
That's correct.
Yeah, Representative Gordon Hintz has emerged as the only assembly Democrat to run to succeed you as minority leader. How much confidence do you have in him to lead the way, assuming he winds up with the job?
Well, I'd be happy to talk about that at a later point. You know, obviously there's an election today. There's some speculation about various people running. I'm not sure who's going to run. But we do have many talented people in the caucus, people that are good at articulating a message and, you know, and people who have worked hard outside the building to recruit candidates and travel the state, spread the message, and do all the things that it takes to be effective as a minority leader. And he's certainly someone that I know has a great interest in. You know, it has been a very strong spokesperson for our caucus. I appointed him to finance the last couple sessions. And you know, with the budget just having been passed, you know, our finance members, Representative Katrina Shanklin and Representative Gordon Hintz, have both done just an admirable job about bringing up issues such as transportation, which is just an absolute disaster in this state, and roads are going to get worse in the next 2 years. Issues such as the fact that pay has gone down for Wisconsin workers the past year, and they'll go down again this year with their passing of prevailing wage. Wisconsin businesses and contractors have gotten the short end of the stick, and that will happen again because of the passage of prevailing wage and the refusal to do a Wisconsin bid advantage. So there's so many issues in this budget that are just so keen, and we have to make sure that our caucus has strong spokespeople, and I think that they will. And I'm hoping that many of some of the newer members and other members who have been in the legislature for a long time will step up even more, and hopefully they will. Yeah.
Well, we will talk about more a little bit more about Foxconn, a little bit more about the state budget. Here's one that kind of bridges the two. Shana on Facebook says, $3 billion for Foxconn, a multi-billion dollar company, but cutting funding for infrastructure and transportation. Shameful. Increased registration fees for hybrids and electric cars. That has nothing to do with raising revenue and everything to do with undermining clean energy. What's your reaction to that, Representative Barka?
Well, I agree with them. I mean, the idea that, you know, the governor, when he first ran, his first his state, I'll never forget, he said he was through kicking the can down the road on transportation, and we were going to come up with a sustainable solution, which is vital. And here we are, four budgets and 7 years later, and we're actually in far worse shape than we were when the governor took the oath of office. It is shameful. We should have solved that problem. You know, last session, the Democrats put forward in the Finance Committee indexing. If we still had indexing in the state, we'd have $1 billion more in the transportation fund. But the two are not related. It's not as if you could do one or the other. But there's no question that that's absolutely vital that we solve this transportation problem. And in this budget, the one thing we can be assured of is that 2 years from now, our roads will be even worse than they are today.
Yeah. How confident are you that Foxconn will live up to its end of the deal and invest $10 billion into its facility and hire 13,000 workers?
Well, that's difficult to determine. Obviously, I think I believe everybody hopes that that is the case. We all benefit if, in fact, they do follow through on those commitments. In fact, the Democrats, in one of our amendments, would have stated that the only way we would give them the higher subsidy level that they've requested, that we've never given to any other Wisconsin company, is if they actually met every one of the three goals of investing the full $10 billion, creating the full 13,000 jobs, and and giving Wisconsin suppliers $1.25 billion in contracts. If we could have passed that, it would be closer to a 15-year deal, and it would have been a better deal. So anyway, now they're on to the contract phase, and I'm hoping in the final contract they will incorporate those ideas into the final contract. But there's no way of knowing for sure, and they maybe cannot even fully predict that because, you know, the market changes over time, and we're looking 15 years down the road, and you never know if the company might be bought out, if we have a change of leadership, if it's a retirement. So it is hard to predict, and that's why I certainly hope in the final contract that the taxpayers' interests are just fully reflected to, you know, absolute tightest degree that we possibly can make it. But I wish they had passed the Democratic amendments because it would have been a much better deal for taxpayers.
Eric from Manitowoc says, when a large manufacturing plant decides to pick up and leave, they have little or no responsibility to pick up the mess they left behind. What is the responsibility of the company when it picks up and leaves?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something else that we discussed because obviously in Kenosha we had a situation with Chrysler that you know, left and abandoned an area in the central city, 8 blocks by 6 blocks, and you know, it ended up that the city of Kenosha and the DNR and EPA had to play a huge role in cleaning up that site. So that was something that was discussed in context with this Foxconn deal, and it would be terrific if they could address that in the contract, that if they were to leave, that there would be some responsibility.
When Governor Walker signed Foxconn into the deal into law yesterday, he did so in Sturtevant in Racine County, which led many to believe that that's where the plant is going. And when we talked to Speaker Voss, he said, "Well, certainly looks like it's going to go into Racine County because." Kenosha took itself out of the running. Are you disappointed that Kenosha took itself out of the running?
No, I'm not. I'm disappointed that the circumstances led Kenosha to have to pull itself out of the running. The mayor and county executive will work very closely on this deal together, along with other city and county officials, had approached the administration on a couple different occasions and indicated that they needed changes in the way the TIF was structured. They needed changes in the way they allow neighboring communities to incorporate. And unfortunately, the administration was unwilling to grant those kinds of provisions. So it was the unwillingness of them to work with Kenosha to do those things in order to make it successful in Kenosha that led Kenosha to pull out. But given the fact that they were unwilling to do that, I support the mayor and county executive's decision to say that we can't make it work in Kenosha. So, I mean, therefore, really at least one site, and that's Mount Pleasant. Now, I also represent Mount Pleasant. And, you know, one thing I would say, Joy, that is pretty remarkable. It's the first time I can remember in 30 years of being involved in public policy and civic leadership that the leaders of both Kenosha and Racine indicated that they were fine whichever site they chose because of the fact that both communities would benefit. So I think that, you know, in a way it's unfortunate it came down to one site, but obviously that's the site.
Well, let's go on to the budget. We touched on it a little bit already, but in a news release, you said the plan is rigged against regular Wisconsinites. How is it rigged?
Well, it's rigged in a number of ways. You know, the Republicans, unfortunately, over the course of the past few budgets, have passed measures that make it nearly certain that wages go down and Wisconsin businesses lose. You know, obviously, they made us a right-to-work state, and predictably, our wages went down because we know that in right-to-work states, people make roughly $6,000 less than they do in other states. With prevailing wage changes, we saw in the last year over 50% growth in the number of contracts going to out-of-state contractors that pay less and do less quality work, and that's very unfortunate. But now they've doubled down on those same policies by now making prevailing wage apply to state contracts as well. So it's nearly certain wages will go down and Wisconsin businesses will lose more contracts that are paid for with taxpayer money to go to out-of-state, low-paid, low-performance contractors. And that's just so unfortunate. Yeah. The other way it's rigged, though, is in tax policy. They literally eliminated a tax credit that went for working families, got rid of it completely. So for all of those, you know, families that qualify for that credit, their taxes will go up. Additionally, and they've taken away indexing for the earned income tax credit, which is for people that make $9, $10, $11 an hour, their taxes will go up. And unfortunately, what they did instead is they took that money, largely speaking, and put it into the alternative minimum tax, which is sort of a minimum tax that people should pay something, mm-hmm. since we all benefit from roads and we all benefit from natural resources and management. We all benefit from schools and university. And they eliminated Barca. That, which largely benefits those at the top of the economic ladder.
I apologize for jumping in, but we're almost out of time, and I did want to get you to react to Governor Walker wants to sign this budget before the end of the week or the end of summer, which is this week. And I'm wondering if you could just comment briefly on, first, the Republican state senators who were holding out until they got assurances that he, Governor Walker, would veto certain items to essentially give them what they wanted.
Well, there's a real question mark about that because, of course, there's state laws against log rolling. And I don't know if that meets that test. I know Senator Urbanbach brought that up on the floor of the Senate. And that's unfortunate because, you know, during this period, normally citizens from throughout the state send letters to the governor to let him know things that they would like to have in veto and things that they would not like to have in veto. And so that, you know, let senators make their vote contingent on veto pledges eliminates the voice of those citizens who rightfully, you know, are I'm sure, contacting the governor's office as we speak, you know, calling that number, 266-1212, sending emails, sending letters, and telling the governor, you know, things like don't eliminate the working families tax credit that hurts, you know, people that are middle income. Don't, you know, make it harder for Wisconsin businesses to get contracts by passing prevailing wage for the state of Wisconsin. Things that we know are harmful, and unfortunately, those senators were able to coerce the governor, apparently, to even move up prevailing wage, which will lower wages and hurt Wisconsin businesses. So it's remarkable that, if those reports are true, that in fact he, that was a kind of trade-off that was made that's not in keeping with the state.
We have just 30 seconds to go. I know that you're going to be stepping down from your leadership position soon. What's the next order of business?
Well, we obviously have been preparing for the fall floor period. We thought the budget would have been done by June 30th, as it normally is when one party controls everything. So, but obviously we're preparing for the fall work period, and we're hoping that we can have issues brought forward that will make a difference to make Wisconsin a better place to live. And
thank you very much for being with us. Peter Barca, Democratic State Representative from Kenosha.